Now, Symbiosis is a big film because it's about food security and also about human connection to the natural world. So, can we start with how you began this project?
So I went to study neuroscience at UCL in London. I had intended to go into research. I was convinced I would go into research. And then throughout the degree, I came across several pieces of research where I realized that there is a big disconnect between, well, in general, there's a big disconnect between science and the public. So a lot of the amazing independent research that is out there is not really brought to the public or communicated very inefficiently. And a lot with regard to topics surrounding nutrition and toxicology specifically. And so I became very interested in this. And so a little bit more to my background, my upbringing. So I come from a rural from the countryside in Austria. And I was always exposed to, we come from a big farming family, for example. And so I was always exposed to this, well, to the food growing process, really. And my mom always had a garden, and so she was a keen grower. And she actually grew up with a her aunt was a herbalist. She was the herbalist of the village in Poland. And so I had all these connections to growing, but it really took decades for me to get into this topic from this side. But it was all sort of sitting there in the background. And so with my degree, I realized that there's a big disconnect between science and the public. And then after I graduated with my master's, I wasn't quite sure. I knew I didn't want to go into research anymore. I thought there's something I would like to go into science communication. And at the same time, so this was in 2015, I was watching a lot of the nutritional documentaries, diet documentaries, or also environmental documentaries that were coming out. And specifically with the nutrition documentaries, I always thought they're a little bit conf they're confusing the public rather than giving them a solution, an empowering solution. I found I thought they were more disempowering people rather than empowering them. Remember one of the documentaries, they were beginning to say that, how bad carbohydrates are and how bad bread is for you. And I always thought it's really interesting. None of these documentaries went into the detail of how important it is, how the ingredients to this food that we then eat are.
What you're doing in your investigations, you actually go back to first principles and you look at the commercialization of food production as a method of disempowering everybody, basically.
Exactly. So it was a real process of getting to understand all this, what our food system has actually become. And I think it's a really interesting thing, and that's why the film became quite extensive, because we began to realize. So once we started, so we were watching these documentaries, and I said to my film partner Francesco, who is a cinematographer, I said to him one day, I called him after watching I don't know how many documentaries it was, but again, it was this not going back to how the food is grown and how it's processed. I thought this makes such a difference between what kind of bread you are eating. Let's just say take bread as an example. But this is you need to look at the fundamentals of the food, and then you can make a judgment whether it's good for you or not, I think. And so I called him and I said, "My God, I'm so upset, I'm so annoyed. Can we please make a documentary?" He said immediately, he said, "Yes, let's do it, let's do it." And we didn't know how extensive it would become, because once you start kind of pulling back curtains and you see things about the issues of food security then and all these other aspects, then you can't just close that, and you can't just say, "Oh, no, that's too much for this."
Yeah, we'll follow this path. You have to actually go through the whole. So let's think about how you actually covered it, because you do it in a very clear way. You decide to do case studies, you decide to talk to experts in particular fields, you follow the science, you follow the commerce. Now, each of these areas are quite deep in themselves. So how long did it take you to do the research and to write the script effectively?
To do the research, I think the research kind of started already towards the end of my degree. So, probably in 2015, that's when I started to really, really look into different topics within nutrition. So, that's but actively researching into it and engaging and contacting researchers. That process probably began in 2016. And then we had our first interview in 2017. That's when we started filming. And then it was a process of, with each interview, you may have discovered a new lead, and you may have heard something and you thought, oh, I haven't thought about this. Let me look into this. So that's how then the next interviewee came about, or a researcher may have said to me, "Oh, Helena, have you seen this documentary?" There were documentaries that were focusing on the individual topics. So there are documentaries that focus on individual topics, but I thought there wasn't one that puts everything into one. I think unless you see, most of the picture, we are not covering every little detail. It's impossible. You have to make a 100-hour film.
One of the very important elements of this discussion is the scientific capture by commercial interests. So, of course, big business can pay for a large amount of research, but they're actually massaging, some of them are massaging the topics as well as the papers in order to get a particular commercial outcome. Now, this is anathema to science, and I was thinking that some of these researchers must have felt quite a deep relief to have someone ask them questions about these issues.
Yes, absolutely. One of the comments was also that when I told them what we're trying to do, so first of all, they were very admirable of what we're trying to do and to put it all in one. And yes, they also appreciated that I come from a science background, so I will they understood that I will not misinterpret what they are telling me. So this was a really important aspect to get to the interviews, because you don't just get these interviews. You are interviewed yourself to get these interviews. And each of these interviews was so it was such a nice conversation really with these people, because they felt like they were being heard and they could really tell their story as well. And as I said, they will not be misinterpreted. So they could talk about their research, about their experiences, because it's not just the research, it's also the experiences that are important, because a lot of the researchers have field experience. So it's not just in the laboratory, they've seen the real life, what's happening in the real world. And to hear all these stories is just we were very privileged to gain access to these amazing individuals. Actually, I'm not just talking about the researchers, it's everyone, the activists, the farmers that we were able to speak to. The extensive knowledge and the emotion that they bring across, I thought was so touching for us when we were doing the interviews. And to then mold it together, it was very special, a very special process, I thought.
The line through all of it is that people in this area, people, ordinary people, but also experienced, as you said, farmers as well as the researchers, they're actually a bit frightened, aren't they? They're frightened about the future because of the commercial interests having captured the human future or the environmental future as well.
Yes, and it's currently there are a lot of legislations that are being put in place behind the scenes while people are busy watching the World Cup and people are busy doing all kinds of things or arguing over all kinds of topics on social media. There's a lot of division being sown amongst the population, I find, what I'm observing. And everybody is busy doing their thing and fighting their fights. And in the background, in the meantime, all kinds of decisions are being made about the future of our food supply. And there was just, for example, just now the EU has now deregulated. I don't know if you're aware, if you come across this, but the EU has now deregulated the plants made by the new genomic techniques. NGT1 plants, which is about 94% of all these new gene edited plants, as in the new genetically modified organisms, they will not have any safety testing. They will not have labeling, and there's no traceability. So,
So big business has won.
yes. So in 2019, they tried it, and the EU Parliament said no. It still needs to be regulated under the genetic modification GMO rules, under the old GMO rules. I think lobbying has been very successful, so they kept lobbying to get this through, and it has now been pushed through. And when you speak to people, this is the interesting thing. I speak to people in Austria, where I'm from, different people in England. Nobody's heard of it because it's kept by design, it is kept out of the limelight. And nobody knows about it. There was no public consultation, really. Yes, there were different organizations have organized petitions to sign, to write to the MPs
Well, there's always people
voice
who
the case.
are keeping an eye on this particular issue. But of course, it was very hot, like a decade ago or earlier. But then it's just a matter of the commercial interests. And as you point out, there's only about five companies that now control the food sources. You actually go into very specifically a broad brush history, because of course as people generations of people lose the historical context, the whole business about the Green Revolution, which was basically subjugating whole areas of the Asian continent under the throes of insecticides and plant varieties that basically, they've brought us to a point where they're destroying the insect worlds and the actual engine of the environment, but it's been dressed up in a way that says that it's all good and it's all about feeding populations.
It's a really interesting topic, and I think that's why it's so important to look back in history, how malnutrition and the degradation and everything, how this actually came about. Because if you don't see the causes and the real causes, you may as an individual, when a solution is proposed, you may think, oh, this is a really good solution. Amazing. Yes, it's a good fix and it works really. They always tell you it's really quick and it's really simple, these genetic modification techniques. They're not that, and they're not failure-free, by the way.
Well, no, they see that as a commercial advantage because if something fails, then they come up with another commercial solution. And as you talk about malnutrition, America is a perfect example, of course, because a whole lot of people have things to eat, but they're malnourished.
Yes, exactly. There's no nutritional value in these foods anymore. That the aim was always to bring the background into it because it's meant to educate people on being able to make an informed decision and being able to see whether something that is proposed as a solution is actually a true solution, because you always need to look at it in a life cycle. In its whole, how does it fit into the environment? And not just with regard to the environment, but how does it fit into society? Does it actually give people some a tool, you know, does it belong to people? Does it give people a does it empower them, or does it make them dependent? Are they going to be independent? Are they going to be free to choose whatever they want, or is it going to catch them in a vicious cycle of dependency?
Symbiosis is showing at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. Are you showing it in other places? Because it's actually a very good summary of the issues that are facing the world. And I think that you have succeeded very well, to tell you the truth. So are you taking it all around the place?
Well, we're trying to get it via, you know, to get it to distribution basically. So at the moment it's in the documentary festival, but it's lined up to go into distribution.
You've done a good job, especially since filmmaking isn't your first skill base. It's a big story, but you've done it in an efficient way, as well as a very personable way, so people that can understand what are the grand issues, but also the personal issues. And I agree with you. It's the business about agency, humans believing that outside forces can come up with answers, and as well as the manipulation of the message, when it's about something so intrinsic to human and the natural world.
Francesco Gallo, my co-director, I just wanted to say that with regard to that you said we did a good job. He's an amazing cinematographer, and he's done an amazing job filming, and and we edited it also together, and so that was and it was always our wish to, you know, to give a voice to those people who don't get much of a voice, and that was really important, and the human aspect. So we really pursued on this, and I think because we are truly independent, I think this was possible. Because I think if you're not truly independent, then all kinds of opinions will come together, and for us, it was so important to stay independent. And to really be able to bring this message across.